Welcome to We Are The Watchers.
...167, top of the day to you, Tom.
Oi, oi.
Welcome to a week of stuff that we've been watching.
There's been some things watched. Hang on, I'm a bit parched. Let me have a beverage. We've started off the dry
now. Here we go.
I've just been... We've been talking a lot already.
Yeah, I had to keep stopping the recording because we were not talking about anything that needed to be recorded. Not because anything...
We were planning a murder.
Oh, yeah, basically. Basically, that's what we were doing. Greetings, subscribers and members of the Watchersville latest newsletter. The doctors at the sleep clinic are looking for volunteers to undergo a dream watching trial. They're looking for 24 people of all ages and walks of life to have their dreams watched by experts to basically see if they're entertaining enough to put on a streaming service. Dr. Professor Doc Professoffer said that since the dawn of time, people have been so excited to tell others about the wild, amazing adventures they experience in their dreams. The problem has always been that the majority of people are terrible at storytelling. They are hoping that pure, unedited, first-hand streams of dreams will be entertaining enough for people to pay for monthly subscriptions to watch what goes on in a person's mind when unconscious. The new burger place is celebrating its 22nd year in Watchersville. A single free fry to the first 20 customers this week will see lines around the block, no doubt. A quick reminder that you will not be permitted to take your dogs to the dog park next Saturday. This is to accommodate the annual Cats in the Dog Park Festival. Meow machine owners are encouraged to once again bring along their feline friends to the fenced off area so the cats are free to roam around, hiss at one another, then sit by themselves staring out at the car park till they're taken home. That's it for now. Stay safe and happy, all residents of Watchersville.
I was inspired because I was watching an older movie and I was inspired to make that, or at least an aspect of it, the quiz this week.
Mm.
I think you can go well with this one.
All right.
To a particular point.
To a particular point.
Yeah.
That bodes well.
But then when I think back to that John Hughes question, do you remember the, like, how many?
Eight.
Yeah, and you were just like,
yeah.
Okay, then.
All right.
This is where we're going, so.
We'll delve.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I've watched the first season of American Gods, which is apparently the best season.
I watched that.
So we'll talk about that soon.
That was the Brian Fuller season, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I need to talk to you about that then. But let's get into the news.
Let's do it.
So this one is probably not groundbreakingly exciting for now, but I think it really indicates that there's a battle in the streaming services. Like the big guys are fighting. So Disney's former EVP of content and creative strategy for, like, Disney worldwide, so not just Disney Plus, Disney channels worldwide. She launched and built the Disney's Play School TV channel, Disney Junior. She's at Netflix now. Nancy Cantor is her name, and on her last day at Disney, Netflix decided, while she was still at work, to announce that she's got an overall deal with her, with them, to develop and produce animated and live-action programs, both films and series, targeted at kids and families for Netflix.
Nice.
They're taking Disney on.
Yeah, that's a big step up.
That's a huge step up. Like, this woman had been working there at Disney, I should say, for 20 years. She knows her stuff. I would challenge anybody to find someone who knows more about that.
Sure.
Than Nancy is. No, it's not. She's it.
She's done your Doc McStuffins and your
anything for
Mickey
the past
Mouse
20
Clubhouse.
Years.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So if anybody has been thinking, we've got enough kids stuff on Disney Plus for the kids at home, we're not watching Netflix, maybe just hold on for a little bit.
That is interesting because Netflix has some cool deals. They do a lot with DreamWorks. You know, they've got the Boss Baby film.
Yep.
And spin-off TV shows. There's a lot of Captain Underpants animated
Still
series
one of the
stuff.
Best names ever.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So I can see her playing with that. I know we talked about the Jurassic World Camp Cretaceous last week.
Yeah.
There's a lot of properties that she could play with.
And new ones that we don't even know
about.
And
so we know She's definitely working on youth projects. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kids and family stuff. So basically, I don't know how high up it would go, whether she would start to tackle like Nickelodeon kind of age level there. I'm not sure, but I could imagine there's the sky's the limit for her, right?
Definitely.
Free reign.
And Netflix can definitely do with more very young kid content.
Yeah. There's not...
We've just kept – I keep going to Disney Plus. If I've got to put something on for Lily, I just go to Disney Plus because that's got Disney Junior.
Yeah.
And that's stuff I know is appropriate for under three.
Yeah, that's right. Big girl Chloe still doesn't care about anything but the Wiggles. Oh, and Al and Me.
Sure.
I think it's called. But that's on ABC.
Oh, there's a lot of that. So much of that.
You could say plethora. Yeah, so that's big news. That's a watch this space kind of thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
What a poach. Closer to home, I don't know if you saw, but there were some photos that came out overnight of first costumes and some filming happening for Thor, Love and Thunder here in Sydney.
I did see a little bit of that. I saw a photograph of Chris Pratt next to Chris Hemsworth looking at the hammer.
Yes.
That was pretty cool.
Yes. Now, the costumes were a bit interesting. Thor is wearing a red leather jacket. Which could just be a random shout out, but there was a while in the 90s where he was kind of known as Thunderstrike.
It's a good name.
Thor was sharing a body with Eric Masterson. It's a whole thing. But yeah, basically.
I'm not going to question it.
No, there was a human guy that Thor shared a body with. When Thor was here, that guy was off in a realm and vice versa.
Yeah, okay.
So if Natalie Portman is becoming Thor in this film, as we are led to believe, then maybe Odinson, as he becomes known, he needs it.
Odinson?
Well, because he's Odin's son.
I know,
it's a very Viking thing.
Amazing. And it also sounds Scandinavian. Odinson.
I think his full name is Thorleif Odinson.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, so perhaps there's going to be a bit of a shout out to that storyline. We also saw in some of the other photos that Nebula is there in all the blue gear, and Kraglin, who is played by Sean Gunn, who's the actual Rocket Raccoon. Mm-hmm. He's the guy that does the motion capture for Rocket.
He's in some sort of sitcom, and I
he
can't
was in Gilmore Girls.
That was it. He was he worked at the Airbnb or whatever that place was.
Yep.
Yeah, he's always rattled.
Well, he's going to be in Suicide Squad as well. He's playing Weasel. He ain't going to last
typecast,
long.
Goodness.
So that's all very exciting. That's happening close. So
very close.
I wonder if we go and get the binoculars out, go and sit on the top of the car park at Fox Studios, whether we might be able to see something happening.
I wouldn't mind a day trip of doing that.
Oh,
Pretty fun.
Put it in the calendar.
Yeah. We'll get the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack out and just get in the mood.
They're the real killers who turn the lights off on Tony Soprano. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
You mentioned Suicide Squad, and it immediately made me think about Jared Leto, or Leto. I never know how to pronounce his name. But Apple TV are making a limited series with him and Anne Hathaway. It's called We Crashed, and it's based on a podcast of the same name, which I haven't heard of because there's like 15 billion podcasts. And it's near impossible to listen or remember them all. But it's about the greed-filled rise and inevitable fall of WeWork, one of the world's most valuable startups, and like just chaos involved in there. That's interesting in the fact that it's just now so common to have huge Hollywood actors. Like these two would have won. I'm pretty sure they've both won Oscars. He has.
What did he win for? Leto?
That one with Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I'm sure Anne Hathaway. She might have won for Les Mis or something.
She was definitely a presenter.
Okay, that
with
counts.
James Franco. So they were a host that year that everyone hated.
That's right.
She looked like she was a hostage.
Yeah, I'm not sure about her. I never.
Did you know
I
she
like
now
her.
Goes by Annie Hathaway?
Okay, well, let me change that then. Annie Hathaway and Jerry Leedy. So they're going to be in this limited series. And what I was getting to was that these huge A-list Hollywood actors. Don't mind committing to limited series these days, which is great because you can see them getting more involved in characters. Like I remember thinking about that when Big Little Lies came out and you have people like Nicole Kidman, Reese Witherspoon, like all of them, Laura Dern, that these were actors who probably only were ever in one film, like, you know, the film with that character. And once that finished, that's the end of that character for them. But this allows them to really develop and evolve the characters. And I think they would get a lot out of it. And we get a lot out of it too.
They get a lot more work.
A lot more work.
Probably get paid equally, if not comparable.
So.
Maybe even more.
Maybe. Yeah.
Depends on the episode count and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. So it's win-win for all of us. But there was another thing that I saw. There's an HBO Max pilot of a show called Verbatim about, you know, the college admission scandal with our Aunt Becky and
yes.
and whatnot. Some of the actors who have been cast, Sarah Gilbert, otherwise known as Darlene Connor, Tate Donovan, otherwise known as the guy that used to date Jennifer Aniston before Brad Pitt, and Kevin Dunn from Veep.
Sure. So I know him from The O.C.
Yeah, The Tate O.C., Donovan, that's right. Yeah. I remember there was a Friends episode that he starred in, and it was along the lines of, oh, isn't it exciting because she's starring opposite her real life love interest, but he wasn't interested in her, I don't think. I think, or maybe that was Brad Pitt's character.
Mm.
Yeah, it was funny though. But yeah, a lot of stuff is still being planned to be made, which I think is, in the world of 2021, where we've had not much being produced last year, this is when we're going to start to see a little bit of dry up of productions coming out. To see people still planning stuff is pretty cool.
Agreed. And I've got a story that ties into that. Apparently, I mean, there's not much known yet, but Ryan Coogler is developing a Wakanda series Disney Plus.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which, you know, everyone's kind of been a bit confused about what they do with Black Panther next, because
probably including them, to be honest with you.
From all accounts, no one knew. Feige certainly didn't know, all this sort of stuff. And their scripts had been written for Black Panther 2, almost ready to rumble. So, of course, there's going to be a huge retooling of that, whether there's a recast of the character or whether it's someone else taking over the role.
Yeah.
A TV show set in Wakanda makes a lot of sense for a Disney Plus show, because then they can focus on the characters of the court and maybe work out who will take over the ruling. I'm not necessarily going to say it's going to be a king next. There have been times when Shuri, his younger sister, she has taken over the throne, or she's separately taken over the mantle of Black Panther. They don't necessarily need to be the exact same person. There's a bunch of different ways they can go, but it'd be cool to see what comes along with that. It's nice to know, again, that, you know, they just announced 10 different series for Marvel, and it's cool to know that they're working on others. This thing we've got at the moment of 3 straight months with a new Marvel show every Friday night is not going to be an anomaly. They want to make this the norm.
I think it's brought comfort to fans. In that we may not be able to go and see a movie because they want to hold off on them to a certain extent, but they're happy to continue stories or build up stories where we can all watch from home and still get the Marvel fix.
Oh yeah, like this most recent episode of WandaVision was so good. I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit later. But it gave the feeling of an MCU movie.
It did, didn't it?
There were some moments where it swung. We got the proper logo at the start. It's been a different logo the other episodes and stuff. So it felt like a proper MCU experience. And it made me realize that I think by the end of this series, they're going to have done some big stuff to the MCU.
I remember early on when I think only the first 2 episodes had come out, and there were a lot of people like, I don't get why this is on. It's no good at all. Not realizing that there was an obvious setup happening. But around the time, they also said that the budget for WandaVision was higher than that of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And people were like, this was an outrage. It's crappy. Why would you put so much money into a stupid thing?
I think it has a higher budget than the first Ant-Man movie.
Oh, no way, really? Well, we're starting to realize why now. Mm-hmm. It's becoming
going to get more bonkers.
Exactly.
So, yeah, there's a pretty good chance by the end of this series, Wanda has said a few words that change the universe. Maybe it sets things up just for Doctor Strange. Maybe it sets things up for some Merry Mutants to join the universe.
I think there's a few setups.
There's a couple of things. So I think it's going to be a real shock to everyone by the end of like, okay, we need to pay attention to these TV shows as well.
Where it started and where it ended, 2 totally different things.
More ticklish than Elmo. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Just a really quick one about Sex and the City and the it's not a reboot, it's like a revisit, I guess I would call it. I think they're only doing a mini series. Sarah Jessica Parker said that in the Sex and the City world, COVID is and has been a thing.
Oh, so it's finished. They're doing Curb Your Enthusiasm style. Curb is pretending that COVID finished like a year ago, and so Larry can be angry about it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, fair enough. And I am in the camp of I don't really care that Kim Cattrall has decided she doesn't want to be in it, because I can kind of understand, like, the show's finished years ago. Well, the movie's finished years ago. She wasn't that close to them.
Yeah, people drift apart in real life.
It doesn't really matter. Everyone will be fine. I think everyone's trying to make too much drama out of it where there isn't actually any.
Just have a bit where, like, on a TV screen in the background, they're talking about her getting arrested for public nudity at a party or something insane.
That's a Samantha Jones thing.
Your excuse. Public indecency.
Yeah.
She's out of the picture.
Perfect.
Look, I was very excited this week. So G4 are an American station. I don't even know what they've done for the last 8 years or something. But
I think they didn't exist for the last 8 years.
It sounds like that. But
I think that's what it is.
Back in the day, at peak my nerddom,
yeah.
They were basically a video games television network online and stuff, or nerd network, basically.
So it was like Good Game, but if it had its own channel.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they had two major shows. X-Play was their serious gaming show, and it was some of the best reviewers around, getting in-depth, fantastic coverage, behind-the-scenes stuff, all this sort of gear. And then they had Attack of the Show, which was a lot more pop culture-based, but that's where Chris Hardwick got his start. That's where Olivia Munn became famous, Kevin Pereira. There's a whole bunch of Alison Hayslip. There's a whole bunch of people that have gone through there and gone out to be very big names at Vice or other plays around Cool Story. Anyway, G4 have announced that in 2021, X-Play and Attack of the Show are coming back in some form.
Amazing.
It looks like they're not going to phone it in. They want to do it properly. Olivia Munn apparently is very keen to get back involved.
Oh, awesome. I think she's very funny.
It was her best work. And there was some stuff that was, you know, of the time and whatever, and like, pretty girl hanging out with hot boys. Let's watch them be awkward. But then she was she's an amazing improv host of just, she could just get involved and go to some very silly places with people and stuff. So this stuff was, as you say, like Good Game, but if Good Game was mixed with Recovery.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Very panicked live feel all the time. You had some hosts that dealt well with that, and you had some people who just, it was, it's amazing to watch.
It's too much. So will this be on just online, or is this going to have its own like cable streaming service?
Wait. So I'm not sure. I have a feeling it's largely going to be online.
That's
makes
kind
a
of
lot of sense. Maybe it's just a Twitch channel or something, but I don't see that, because these guys were involved with all the big players and this sort of stuff, and had major branding and always had the biggest spot at Comic-Con. And there was a lot of money involved with these guys during the promotion they were doing.
Maybe it's kind of going to be like I'm trying to think of a giant bomb, Rooster Teethy kind of, to a lesser extent, thing.
I can see it being a collective of reviewers, comedians, this sort of stuff that make content all the time.
And it just goes everywhere.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
But stay tuned. As soon as I hear more, I will share the word, because this is very cool. Mm. And back in the day, I had my eyes on maybe going that direction.
Oh, nice. Imagine Tom on G4.
Yeah.
It'll work. Look, speaking of things that are potentially coming back, because everyone needs a streaming service. So there's a thing called Paramount Plus, which I don't know if I knew about or not, but it's part of that Viacom CBS thing.
All right.
They want to make a remake, not a remake, a revival of Frasier. Kelsey Grammer has been trying to make this a thing for quite a while. From what I assumed reading a couple of articles, the reason it hasn't happened yet and that it hasn't gotten the proper tick is that all of the actors in that show, like, this show ended up with, 30-something Emmys. It went for 10 or 11 seasons, so there's hundreds of episodes. By the time this show finished, they were making a lot of money from each episode. Sure. And they'd want a similar amount to come back and do a revival. So maybe there just isn't that much money that Paramount or Viacom, CBS are willing to give for this kind of thing. But at the same time,
they ponied up money for Big Bang Theory every year for years. Two and a Half Men.
Yeah, Two and a Half Men. But you think about all the other revivals. You've had your Will and Grace. You've had your Roseanne and Connors to a certain, you know.
Do you think it's because Frasier plays to a different base?
Maybe.
It's a different demographic to what CBS chases. If you think about the comedy that CBS generally produces, it's your mom, Two and a Half Men, your Big Bang Theory, it's about critical mass.
You're right.
Maybe there's an element of do we throw, honestly, $50 million just to start production on a highfalutin
exactly. Democratic. Where we laugh at him. It may not be the right time for that kind of character to exist at the moment.
Maybe David Hyde Pierce is secretly a fish man and he won't come out of his tank.
They're trying to coerce him
onto the couch.
Right.
I haven't seen him in much since he did the voice for Abe Sapien in Hellboy.
I can't think of anything I've seen him in. Also, the father has passed away. He passed away a couple of years ago. So it's not going to feel
What about
right.
the dog? How's the dog?
The dog passed away as well. Around the same time, I think.
Sure.
I remember reading about it and then saying it on air at one point in time. So it was when I was doing radio. So it's probably a while ago.
Why don't they make a show that's a reboot? Not a reboot, but a revival. But like pull together different characters from shows that would be good for a revival. Like why don't we have a grown-up Blossom working in the Cheers bar? That way we can check in and Frasier as well.
And Kevin Arnold's there.
Yes. And Alf finally broke out of Area 51. And so he's hiding in the storeroom.
Yep.
He scares away the rats with a mop.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Who else is there?
Did you ever watch that show Hanging with Mr. Cooper?
No, but I'm aware of it.
He had some fun lines, and I think he was like a sort of a tall, almost lanky kind of guy. I reckon he could come in and do some pretty good like physical comedy in front of people who are not interested.
Sure.
Like not Urkel levels, just a few levels back.
Okay.
Yeah, from that. Sabrina Teenage Witch or maybe just the aunts.
Yeah, the aunts.
Yeah. Caroline Ray. I don't know why I remember her name. I don't remember the other's name, but I always remember her name.
She's a talk show host.
Maybe that's why. But I don't think I watched the show either.
I've seen like two episodes. I saw one with Kelly Clarkson. It was a very upbeat experience.
Yeah, that would be a lot. But probably perfect. That was a daytime show, right?
Yes.
Be perfect for about 11 a.m.
Oh, those mums were excited.
Loving it. That's before they were allowed to dance at Ellen.
Woo.
Any other nyals?
Not so much news, but there's some trailers.
Perfect.
Some hot things. So I didn't get to watch it last night as of our time of recording, but I'm going to be checking out the first episode of Holy Moly. I don't know if you saw the trailer for that, but that is a putt-putt reality show.
Oh, is that
show.
The one with
Rob Riggle?
Greg Norman?
Yes, the giant Greg Norman head. I think he's in it. I don't know.
It's off-putting.
And I think, is it Matt Sherrington? I don't know about sports people, but there's another host, an Australian sports person host. I think maybe the Lego Masters people behind the scenes might be involved or something.
Okay.
I don't know.
It's, all right. That's giving me a bit of a tone and context for it.
I could be completely wrong.
I've only seen the poster on buses. So.
Yes. I could be so wrong. It might just be the same graphic design company.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? I haven't looked into it too much. Yeah. I've seen the poster on buses and stuff a few times, and then I saw a trailer yesterday.
Yeah.
Made a note to watch it. Stay tuned.
It'll happen.
Yes. There is a documentary coming to Showtime called Supervillain, The Making of Takeshi 6ix9ine.
Now, ooh.
Are you aware of Takeshi 6ix9ine?
Well, I got excited because I thought you were going to say Takeshi's Castle.
Yes, and I could see that happen.
I had to scale my expectations back to curious interest.
Sure. So Takeshi 6ix9ine is one of the worst people alive. He's a rapper, like a SoundCloud rapper. So made his own way, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
His whole deal is to be intentionally provocative all the time and to just say the worst things possible. So he's that kid who was 16, 17 and thought it was hilarious to make rape jokes and never grew out of it and has gotten himself in worse and worse shit. And I haven't followed all of this part of the reason why I'm keen to see this documentary, but he ended up getting arrested and getting in a lot of trouble and being put on trial and snitched. other people went away for a lot longer because of what he said.
Do you have like colourful hair or tattoos everywhere all over his face? I know who you're talking about.
So he's now out of jail and under constant security because he basically believed his own shit and got involved in a crime world he had no business being in, then got busted and then threw everyone under the bus and like, oh, man. Anyway, so it's called
Supervillain. What a life he's going to live from now on.
Yep. And he's like, everyone always thinks they're the hero in their own story, but what if someone set out to be the villain? It's like, oh, man, you're the worst.
Yeah, he sounds like someone I probably wouldn't hang out with.
Exactly. the thing that hooked me about this trailer is that anytime you see this sort of movie, it's recreations and someone, you know, friends or people that met them a few times telling stories after the fact. Mm. Whereas this guy's such a narcissistic, egoist fuckwit. He's on camera confessing to all the stuff all the time and doing the stuff on camera.
So in that respect, he's kind of like the people that went to the Capitol and did that, like they broke in but filmed themselves doing it.
Yep.
It's that kind of thought process.
It's right the posing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Ah, that probably is like a train wreck kind of show where you can't stop watching, right?
I'm amped for this.
Yeah.
It's like the flip of a beautifully constructed Taylor Swift documentary or an Ariana tour concert thing. This is just like, hey, Reddit, check out how I fucked my life for the lulz.
I'm going to be interested to hear your review on it.
I think I'm going to really like
this. I think
this,
you are
even though
too.
I don't like him and I don't care much for his
but
music.
But the story is bizarre.
It's bizarre. Yeah. His commitment to his art is impressive.
Yeah, yeah. And face tattoos.
Yeah.
He's got a lot, right?
He's got a lot.
Yeah.
They're different in style. Post Malone, Posties just look drawn on.
Like, they
I don't
know what
the fuck Posties on about.
What if we actually paid proper attention and they move slightly every
like
shot?
Like Rorschach?
Yeah, so you're like, hang on a second. They're not real, are they? You've been drawing them on for like 3 years.
I don't know what that guy's got to do. Has he got to write help in giant red backwards on his forehead?
We'd probably not pay any attention, in all honesty.
Throw more money at him.
Yeah, exactly.
Dance, monkey. Sing your song. And look, the other trailer, which I know we've talked about, or I've talked about this show being excited for, but is Young Rock. Did you happen to see the trailer for this?
No, I didn't see the trailer, but I saw that there were posts about the trailer. So I'm like, I've got the adjacent side of the story, which is not really. It's like periphery stuff. What does it look like?
Well, it looks pretty much just what I thought before. It's from the same people that made Fresh Off the Boat.
Yep.
Randall Park, the dad from that, is on this. And it's in 2032 or something like that. He is sitting down with The Rock, who is about to become president, and they are talking about his life story, going back and discussing key elements. And, yeah, there are scenes in when Rock is about 7 or 8, 15 and 20. Different actors playing him at those different times.
Does it feel like it's going to be a limited sort of series?
I don't think so. It feels like Everyone Hates Chris.
Yep.
Sorry. It's Everyone Hates Chris. I don't know why I could have saved all of that explanation if I just said that.
Yeah, but sometimes the brain has to catch up with stuff and the mouth just fills in time.
I think the fact that it's The Rock means that it can go as long as it wants to.
Mm.
He muscled for Ballers to go as long as he wanted and it only wrapped up because he'd had enough.
Mm.
Whereas, you know, there could be complications if the kid grows up too fast or something like that. They get too close if it goes on for 5 years. But he's retelling stories from his mind and it's The Rock. They're going to be exaggerated stories. So he can just be played by someone different.
Filmed in Queensland?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not The Rock parts.
No.
I think The Rock parts are all filmed in Atlanta or something where he's been recently. But, all the Young Rock.
Yeah, which is cool. Here.
Very cool.
Should we get into some watching suggestions?
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
I've got some stuff that I just want to tell you about really quickly.
Tell me.
Married at First Sight had like a reunion special, except it went for 2 nights and the second night was like 2 hours and it was really boring.
Were you thankful it's probably the last sight of those people?
Yeah. Because they kept advertising this year's season. So those people are not going to be there anymore. But it was just, particularly the second night, it was just so obvious that some of them were told by producers, this is your storyline, and they couldn't, there was no way to stray from it. Like at one point, there was one character, I don't even know what to call them.
Former contestant?
I guess so.
Influencer?
That's exactly what they are. Her only storyline was that she was offended that people had said something about her and her mothering style. In the end, she just walked out. And I was like, I know why you've walked out, because there's nothing left for you to talk about. That's all the producers have told you to say. So you storm out as a tantrum, but there was no reason to have a tantrum.
They should get me on one of these shows, because if I find myself in that sort of situation, I'm going to turn around and say to someone, you ever seen a ghost? Or something weirder. Yeah, I talk about fishmen.
Yeah,
whatever.
Anything else. Yeah, it was really...
lean into the bad parenting style thing. Just
lean
like,
into it. Just do something. Like they kept having flashbacks to when people from a couple of years ago would, I don't know, like it, but I couldn't tell if it was a flashback because they were all dressed the same. Oh, so confused.
Nah, I'd be like,
I couldn't be bothered.
I'd be like, hey, everyone, good to see you all this evening. I hope you're doing well with your families. I haven't hit my kids this week, and then wink at the camera. Fucking work with that, editors.
I realized that the only good bit of Married at First Sight is the beginning bit where they have to meet their new spouse, and either they're like, yikes, or looks all right. But usually one of them is into it, one of them isn't, and watching that awkwardness is the only entertaining part.
So is it kind of like Reverse Bachelor?
Yeah, I guess so.
It's instead of spending an entire season building up to one pinnacle moment.
You have the pinnacle moment.
In the premiere.
And then it all goes downhill from there. Yeah.
Not my style of show.
No.
I've watched the first 10 minutes of this, and I'm putting it aside now because I've got to be in the right mindset to continue on with this and stuff. But there's a new show on Amazon Prime called The Great Escapists. And it stars Richard Hammond of Top Gear.
Oh, yeah.
With Tori Belleci from Mythbusters.
That's a stellar cast.
So the two of them supposedly have their boat has crashed on a deserted island.
Okay, this is not where I thought it was going.
No, it won't. They are crashed on a deserted island entirely alone. They eventually find the boat and all the stuff that was left and have to start creating and inventing for their own survival. So
that's kind of cool.
Yeah, so the first episode is like, how do we get off this island? Let's build a raft. There are 9 episodes, so they're clearly not getting off. I've seen yeah. shots from later in the season and stuff, and they yeah. built like a mini city.
It sounds like they've done some sort of sim game, but in real life.
It really does. And like there's shots of like they've got the fuselage up in the air they find a bit of plane and yeah. they put that up in the air underneath yeah. the boat. And so they create a multi-storied house. So when the tide comes in, they're not getting wet. Mm. They've got pulley and lever systems.
They've watched Blue Lagoon, haven't they? They've learned.
There's something about pairing madman Richard Hammond, who comes up with some crazy ideas and things and does a lot of these sort of documentary shows yeah. with Tori Belleci, who is a proper maker and someone who does this for a living. They're working well off each other. So I'm only touching on it briefly now because, as I say, I've only just seen the first little snippet last night.
Sure.
They're 45-minute episodes and there's
and
like 9
And you just
weren't
in
them.
The mood.
So
I understand.
That's an afternoon show. It's not a 11 o'clock the night before we record. That's when I'm cramming in things.
For sure.
Stay tuned on that one.
We were talking about the fact that American Gods, I watched the first season of. Now, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I listened to the audiobook of American Gods and really enjoyed it. So I don't know why I kept putting off watching the series, but I started watching the series and then realized that I didn't really remember much of it. I remembered like bits and pieces, the odd character, but their take on it was a lot darker than my head's take.
Sure.
And I don't feel opposed to that. I quite enjoyed it and it sucked me in, and the Gillian Anderson scenes whenever she was in, I was like, yes, on board with that. And I was also savoring that because I know she was just in that first season, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Did you watch it a fair while ago?
Yes. So I watched season 1 when it first came out.
Yep.
And I will admit that I have not watched season 2 or 3. Season 3 just dropped on iTunes like a week or two ago.
Yep. Which feels like a long time between drinks, right?
Yeah, I went to a panel for season two at New York Comic Con.
Oh, yeah.
2018, maybe 17? I don't know. Somewhere around there.
That's a long time ago.
It was the same time when they first announced the boys.
18, maybe?
Yeah, it must have been.
I think. So had you read or whatever the Neil Gaiman book?
No.
So you came into it nice and fresh.
Yeah. And it was cool.
Yeah, it was cool. It
wasn't quite my bag.
Is it because it was darker? Well, I was going to say darker than you expected, but.
It was a touch too whimsical at points, which okay. is the opposite of your
yeah, absolutely.
Thing. The leprechaun guy
yep.
and the flowers and stuff. I don't know. Mm-mm. I still enjoyed it, but it was, you know, it wasn't quite. It's like I've said, Neil Gaiman stuff doesn't always hook me the way I expect. So Good Omens, I recently rewatched that because I started it last year and didn't get through properly. I really enjoyed that. And that was far more whimsical than I normally go in on. So American Gods, I do intend to go back and watch season two and three because I did enjoy that first season. But it was such a break between seasons.
Yeah.
And then because it's on – I want to say
I think it's Stars. Amazon. Oh, right. Okay.
Here it's on Amazon.
Right, okay.
But in the States, it's on something like Stars or like a second or third tier cable network. It can be pretty difficult to track down.
I have heard that the second season is a – I think the word I've seen is oof compared to the first.
Sure.
So that's why I'm a little trepidatious, but also kind of want to see it for myself. Not sure.
I know Orlando Jones, who played Mr. Anansi, he's not happy at all with where the show went.
That's right.
Yeah. He's very vocal about that.
I think that might have been around the time where I started to become aware of the show. I was like, what's he doing? He's not happy about this? I must investigate.
Follow The Watchers on Twitter at TheWatchersPod1.
Very quickly, there was an interesting episode of the Goldbergs last week. Now, they're on like season 8 now or something, so this is not news or anything. I'm not reviewing the show, but they love to do their homage episodes, and they did an homage to Cocoon in which the young guy was, you know, the younger son was trying to get the grandfather motivated and stuff and got some goat wheat or some sort of pump up powder.
What was the wheatgrass drink? Do you remember people have wheatgrass shots?
Yeah, that's still a thing, I'm sure.
I'm sure it is.
I don't know. His teacher at school, his science teacher is Steve Guttenberg, and he's been on the show a bunch of times. And so they have Guttenberg in talking plenty about Cocoon and not knowing about the movie Cocoon. Okay. It was done so cleverly.
That's really cool.
They kept making really strong references to it. And I love Goots.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. This he's popped up in some cool places over the last couple of years. He had a great little run on Ballers. And I really enjoy seeing him on Goldbergs.
Am I right in thinking that for a while they weren't sure if Bill Murray was going to actually show up to do Ghostbusters, and they kind of were thinking maybe
he
would have been the replacement if
I'm down
Bill Murray.
With that.
Yeah, I would have been happy with that too.
I still feel that the world needs Guttenberg and Moranis to do a project together.
Have they not done one together? Oh my gosh.
I can't think. Just imagine how much joy.
You're right. I don't think they
even
have.
Even just a photo of them sitting on a park bench both enjoying a cappuccino and a donut.
Bernie Sanders meme next to them.
Yeah. The world would really appreciate that.
Yeah. Just a quick one from me. It's not actually a show or anything, but I played the board game Pandemic with Steph and Jasper.
Yes.
None of us had played it before. There were other people playing as well. And it's a really fun game. You get really into it. It's co-op. So you're all working together. It's the players against the virus. And we played two games of it. The first one, you know, when you're just trying to figure out what to do. And the really depressing thing was in the one where we were just figuring out what to do, we actually beat the virus. But when we had we felt like we were in the swing of things. We started having tactics. We're like, all right, let's go over here and start this way, like really go aggressive into this area. And we lost. But a lot of fun, and I understand why it was such a big game. It was sold out last year.
Did you beat America? How they've done?
We did better than America.
Sorry, America. Nice. Good bit of game.
Yeah, it's nice to catch up and do some board games. You know, when you have people who are like, yeah, we're into the same level of board games as you are. We were having this discussion about Monopoly and how, why is it always people who don't play board games are like, let's play Monopoly.
Oh, no.
But other people who, you know.
Anyone who's ever played Monopoly is like, no, I'm good.
I don't want to.
That's not a fun game.
If you don't have Park Lane and Mayfair, what's the point?
I'm too passive for that game, so I end up doing well because everyone else is aggressive and stiff each other over. And yeah. I just sit back and wait.
So they're not watching you. No. Yeah, that's a good tactic. Have you watched anything else?
So Straight Up Steve Austin, which is Steve Austin, Stone Cold Steve Austin's not talk show but chat show where he gets people and they go out for a day. That's back for a new season. The first episode I didn't watch was Country Music Superstar Somebody Someone.
Great.
So I skipped past that one. Was there
a cowboy hat?
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if Stone Cold wears trucker's hat. That's about it. Oh. Fuck your hats.
Yeah.
But I watched the second and third episode. One was with Ice-T and they were driving around in a lowrider through Compton. And it was very cool to see how much love Ice-T has there. People go nuts for him.
That's awesome.
And then the second one that I watched was with Tiffany Haddish.
Mm.
And they went out for a fancy day on a boat and they played some golf on a roof.
Yeah. Wait, where?
Played golf on a roof, like driving range.
Yeah, fun.
On a very fancy hotel top.
Sounds very New York.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, she's got a shaved head at the moment. So the two of them were talking, you know, scalp appreciation tips.
I love that that's something they would bond over.
Yeah, I enjoy the show because his personality is very boisterous and he could come across as a bully, but he's so exuberant about things and excited to have people there that even his gruff demeanor comes across as, I appreciate you being here, let's talk some stuff. And he goes in and asks some serious questions on people that you think it's going to be a light James Corden style carpool karaoke driving around and chatting, but he more uses the fact that there's no camera people around to just get people to open up.
So you would never think that, you know, he would be that kind of interviewer, like have that style.
Well, they must go and film for at least 4 to 6 hours across the whole day and they drink at some point. Have big meals and stuff, and he just gets them really relaxed. And once they're relaxed, that's when he will fire off some, like, so your career took this direction. Have you ever thought about what would have happened if that hadn't panned out? Or, you know, what sort of hardships have you been through? And then focus on that. So he gets through the fun stuff, but he, like, got into some serious gear with Ice-T.
He must, that must be what he's like if you hang out with him.
Well, he has a podcast and it's the same deal if he brings people in and opens them up. And it's, I don't know how he developed that skill as well as he does, because it doesn't match his wrestling personality.
Yeah, right.
But from all accounts, it perfectly matches his behind-the-scenes wrestling persona of you know, how he interacted with management and things like that, and why he got such a big push is that he can be super present and whoever he's talking to is the most important person alive.
Mm.
I know. It's a good show. And it's he keeps politics largely out of it, which I think is a very wise move at the moment, especially because he's talking to people from across the spectrum.
Yeah, and some people, I'm guessing, I would think some people in his fan base may not know that he potentially does not have the same political views as him. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, they wouldn't know. This is the second season?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
So I think the first season either had 6 or 8 episodes. And this has clearly been done during COVID times, so they're not interacting with crowds or anything the way the first season did of going out to specific places. This is, let's get a boat or let's hire a car. But
that might lean in better to, you know, being able to ask those questions.
I really think so. Yeah. It's creating a very intimate atmosphere for the show.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let's talk some WandaVision. What do you reckon?
Let's do it.
So episode 3 was where we finally got that proper view of the outside world.
Yeah, that little glimpse at the tail end of Monica Rambeau being thrown out.
And then this episode was called something like Meanwhile.
And now
called?
We return to our regularly scheduled programming, or now we interrupt this broadcast.
That was what it was called.
Yes.
Yeah. And
next week's episode, I think, is called We Now Return You.
Okay, that makes sense. As you referred to earlier in the episode, this is probably the episode that people who are not on board with the sitcom references that they didn't know, this is where suddenly it would have clicked for them.
Yes. Most of the answers were already there. If you looked and you joined and this sort of stuff, I'm really appreciating the drip feed nature of it. This is event television again. We don't get it too often. I don't think this would have nearly the same impact if we watched 4.5 hours on it on Friday night 3 weeks ago.
Well, you couldn't talk to anyone about
Correct.
It.
Correct.
Because no you'd be like, what mull. Do you have to... So as soon as I saw it, when they started to go down the drainage system, I was like, Tom was right about the beekeeper. Spot on. Yeah. So applauding you for that one.
Thank you. So yeah, the little helicopter was the drone that went in with Monica.
Yep.
I think it's very interesting that we saw the names on the wall and who they were referring to as played by.
Mm. I want to know more about that.
Well, we didn't see Catherine Hahn's name. There was a picture of her on the wall, and same with Dottie, who was she was on Buffy. But the blonde lady who was in charge of the PTA last week, or whoever it was, the manager.
Yeah, the one who cut her hand.
Yes, those two didn't have things on there, and we don't know who Agent Wu's missing person. That the reason why he came to Westview at the beginning was that he was checking in on an FBI someone who's That's in witness right. protection. We still don't know who that person is.
Could that be the husband that we haven't met yet?
It could be the husband. It could be Catherine Hahn, but surely he would notice her.
Yes.
There's a hot theory.
Oh, yeah, come on.
That I like this one. There's a hot theory that if we're going to start getting multiverse stuff, right, and we know Wanda's brother Pietro died in this universe during Age of Ultron, there's a theory that the mutant version from the X-Men films – will somehow be in this town, but it's not, but like it's our universe's equivalent. So if Wanda saw him, she wouldn't necessarily know that he was her brother from another universe.
Oh, right.
And somehow him being there has triggered some grief with her, as well as Vision and all the death and everything surrounding that. She's created this perfect bubble, and maybe she will meet him and he gets to become this universe's Quicksilver.
I mean, it kind of makes sense. I mean, it makes sense in that we were reminded of him, and so was Wanda blatantly.
Mm-hmm.
It would make sense that there's more to that than just at the end of the WandaVision credits, every episode it says, we recommend you watch Age of Ultron. I'm like, okay.
So it's a very out there, convoluted theory. It might be too complicated stuff, but I still.
But there
like
has
that.
To be more to him, to the brother. Also, that shot of Vision dead, like zombie Vision, that was awesome.
Shay had questions.
Oh, because she hasn't seen.
Nah, she hasn't seen the movies and stuff. And I've explained bits and pieces, but she's like, "Why was he white? And what's wrong with his head?" I'm like, "Oh, that's how he looked when he was dead." She's like, "So is he dead now?" And I'm like, "I think he is still dead. Mm. I don't think he's back." There are 2 points in the episode where Vision stares directly into camera.
Yep, I noticed that.
The first time he's not near Wanda and it's almost like he's looking for help. The second one is just your standard sitcom dad.
Yeah, it was
like,
a sitcom stare. My life. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, there is a moment where he says something, things aren't right here. And as he says he looks into the camera just for half a moment. So maybe it's nothing, but... There's cracks forming, cracks showing. I love the fact that you had Agent Wu from Ant-Man and Ant-Man and the Wasp. You had Darcy, Kat Jennings from Thor 1 and Thor the Dark World.
She had a real Marvel character vibe to her.
Didn't she? The snark.
Yeah.
The Marvel
That's
snark.
That's exactly
I'm
going to
undercut every moment with it with a joke, whether
That's
or
right.
not it lands.
Can I get a coffee?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found her infinitely more tolerable in this than I did in the Thor movies because I didn't want a yuck character in the Thor movies, whereas this, she works really well there.
Yep.
You've got Monica Rambeau, who is the little girl from Captain America. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Captain Marvel. Her mother was Captain Marvel's
That's right.
friend.
Yep.
So if this
whenever
almost,
they say Rambo, you know I'm thinking.
I know Rambo.
It's really difficult. Yeah.
So this was kind of like a Avengers C-list character offshoot sidekick Infinity War.
Yeah, right.
Of getting together sitcom-ish characters from different movies and putting them together.
Oh, clever.
And it just worked.
Yeah, it did. Yep.
The bit I think that made me cheer the most, and no one in the new room understood why, and I'm sure plenty of people will never care, but that first moment when Agent Wu walks up and he's walking to her and he says, "I'm Agent Wu," and he pulls his card up, tricky like that, all during Ant-Man and the Wasp, he'd been attempting to learn a magic trick because he'd seen Scott do that once with a card.
Yeah.
Just the payoff of...
Yeah. A nice little thing. No, I did notice other people on the internet
it's paying off like that. A four-year-old joke or something.
And it was easy. It was easy to do.
So good.
This is a show that I think... We've spoken about it before. You've watched all of the Marvel movies and you have knowledge of the comics, whether you've read them all or not. I haven't. Mm-hmm. I've watched a select few, but I've watched those last two big ones. Mm. So I know what's happening. So there are little bits that I'm like, I'm not going to pick up on this. I'm going to have to talk to Tom. You know, he'll fill me in on those little bits and pieces. So whenever we get to kind of do this, I leave going, maybe I should watch it again. Maybe I should watch that episode again.
To get, like, they're at the level where, okay, so when Monica pisses Wanda off and she knocks her out of the world, how many walls does she go through? 1, 2, 3, and then she breaks the fourth wall in back into the real world.
See, I didn't, yep.
All these sort of like, oh, man, you guys are playing with sitcom format. This is so good. It's so, I think when it ends and we can look back and see what it achieved, people are going to appreciate the sitcom stuff on a whole different level.
I hope so, because I think it's very clever already.
And I think once we find out exactly why it's happening and you know, whether this is actual evil, whether it's, you know, is she going to be the bad guy for Doctor Strange 2? Maybe it goes that direction.
That'd be cool.
Is she being coerced into this? Is she unconscious and someone's manipulating her mind? There's all sorts of different...
Because from what I gather from that episode, it does now feel to me, or at least they're making me believe it, that it's more her idea.
Yeah.
She knows, but she's trying to forget that she knows.
Yes, but then that makes you wonder, why is she making fake ads in the middle of the programs?
True.
Advertising Hydra, her biggest enemy, the people that made her. So I completely agree. Mm. They've positioned her now to be the big villain, but there's got to be someone behind that pulling the strings.
And the nature of this show that we've seen so far in these four episodes is that they make you look over in this direction while something's happening in that direction, then you turn around to look in the second direction only for something to happen in the first direction. You're like, oh, okay. Which, and it's great. I like that kind of thing.
It's a mystery box show.
It really is. Mm. Yeah. I'm enjoying it probably more than I originally thought I would. I thought, I'll go along for the ride. It'll be fun. But I'm actually intrigued. And the references, you know, I like a good reference. You know, where you go, oh, I know that.
I think it's going to be interesting to see whether you enjoy it enough to continue watching, you know, Falcon and Winter Soldier. I can, if you don't stick with that one, I think you will stick with that one.
Yeah.
But even if you don't, I can see you coming back for Loki.
Oh, yeah. Loki's going to be
bonkers again.
And definitely, I think Loki, no, I do. I think Loki is probably the bigger profile show for people who have just got, Marvel periphery vision.
Yes, and he's appeared in so many of them. He was in the first Avengers movie.
And you know, whether you know Marvel's version of Loki, people know the name Loki, the association behind that. You're like, there's going to be shenanigans.
And when you think of Marvel villains in the movies, you either think of Thanos or you think of Loki. The rest of them have been fun, but they either die in that film or they're not as fun.
Mm. You
know, Cate Blanchett was great fun,
she
died. Yeah. You know, Loki, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Should we get into some quizzing?
Let's do it.
I decided to get back into Mighty Ducks, like the rewatch, after we hear that the show is... I saw the trailer.
Yeah. We didn't talk about that.
But the trailer happened and Lynn's it was great
was very
fun.
Excited.
I bet she was. And we're going to have to get her in when the show starts. But... So I started watching D2, Mighty Ducks 2, and I thought, I'm going to do an Emilio Estevez version of the quiz. See how you go with some Emilio.
Oh, no.
I think you'll be all right.
Oh, no.
Very good. What's Emilio's character in all of the Mighty Ducks things?
Gordon Bombay.
Well done. So we're starting off easy, right?
All right.
Now we get into the guessing territory.
Yes, that's it.
What year did The Breakfast Club come out?
80.
Mm.
9?
Oh.
8.
5.
Oh, man. Way earlier. So off.
Way earlier. All right. Let's stay around The Breakfast Club.
So I was 1.
Yeah, but it's been on television.
It has. It has.
Name 3 other actors from that movie.
From Breakfast Club?
Yeah.
Judd Nelson, Molly Ringwald. Is it not Jennifer Jason Leigh?
I get those two mixed up as well. You could also go...
There's Emilio.
The guy.
And Anthony Michael Hall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ali Sheedy is who you were trying to find. But yeah,
Ali Sheely.
I get those two mixed up and a little bit of... no, it doesn't matter. I can't remember her name. But there's 3 of them, but one's a bit younger and they're mm-hmm. all in my head the same person.
Sure.
Remember who it is. What pink Nintendo character has the same name as Emilio's character in St. Elmo's Fire?
I'm going to punt and say Kirby.
Correct.
That's my Kirby impression.
Yep, correct.
All right.
That's an interesting name for a male character in a movie about people in their early 20s.
Mm.
Very interesting. Did Emilio or Charlie Sheen appear in an episode of The West Wing? It was only one of them that appeared in it.
I'll go with Emilio.
It was Emilio. He played, he played a young version of Martin Sheen.
Sure.
But it was in like a flashback, like a news story yeah. kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay.
Just for one.
I can't see them tapping Charlie to be on that show at any point.
Not at that time. He no. was, yeah. Emilio Estevez and Rob Lowe were both part of the Rat Pack. Can you name the 2 movies they starred in together? We've already mentioned one.
St. Elmo's Fire? Mm-hmm. Was that the one we mentioned?
Yep.
Okay. All right, let me think. Emilio and...
Yeah, the other movie that they were in was a bit earlier. I'd say early 80s, I should say. Had a lot of other...
It's not Fast Times, is it? No.
No, no. This one I think was a bit more serious, but it had so many other...
Is it the one in the diner where all the boys sit, all the young guys sitting around?
Potentially. They were all A-list
yeah.
leading males later on.
Yeah. Was River Phoenix... No.
No. Had like Patrick Swayze, Tom Cruise, these 2 blokes.
Yeah, I know the movie. I've never seen it.
The Outsiders. I think I've watched it once years ago. I don't actually remember what it was about, but everybody in that ended up as a starring male lead.
I know about it because I've read an article about it in Empire.
Sure. I've
never watched the film.
Tom Cruise is very young. You look at him and you're like, is
sure.
that him?
Is that pre-Risky?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't even think – I don't remember who was the main character, but amazing cast. Well done. You didn't do that badly, I thought.
I did all right.
Yeah. For Emilio Estevez.
Yeah. My score wasn't that Rob Lowe. that was bad.
On that note, Tom, thank you very much.
I don't have anything. I didn't know we were going to finish so quick.